चापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाः कदमयां ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरौ श्रीयुथापदकमलं श्रीगुरुर्वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपां सागरजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितां तां सजीवम् सार्वैतां सावधूतां परिजनासहितां कृष्णचैतन्यदेवां श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनाबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चना गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुधे देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासवी गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे हरे
is that with every rising and setting of the sun, we are one day closer to death. But for those who utilize their precious moments in life to cultivate the seed of devotion, then with every rising and the setting of the sun, we are one day closer to eternal life. In the world we live, beautiful experiences, obstacles, difficulties, tragedies, they come of their own accord. It is explained in the scriptures how the whole creation is constituted on the principle of dualities. Pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, success, failure, victory, defeat. And the nature of the world is we're always grabbing for the positive side and clinging to it when we have it. But the negative side is inevitable. You can't really have one without the other. So how to find real peace, real happiness, in a world where everything is changing? Could I tell you a story?
Yes.
I was hoping you would say that. One day, I was sitting on the sandy bank of the river Ganges. It was about noontime. The sun was very bright. I looked up into a clear, blue, cloudless sky. And there, way up above, was a hawk with his wings expanded, soaring in circles. How beautiful. So effortlessly. Just knew exactly how to maneuver his wings. He wasn't even flapping his wings. He was just barely moving them. And controlling precision, aviation, direction, just by knowing how to harmonize himself with the wind. Sometimes he was flying very fast, sometimes very slow, and I didn't see him moving his wings. Just like this. And he didn't even go to aviation school. Isn't it incredible how different living beings are empowered with supernatural powers? Now for the hawk, it doesn't seem like a supernatural power. It seems normal. But if a human could do that, yes? It's like if Tukaram just all of a sudden started flying over us. He's a master yogi. He has supernatural powers. He must be God. But when a bird does that, we just hope they don't drop something in our head. If this little boy, if he started crawling up the walls, we would think, he's really a yogi. He's walking up walls. But we see insects doing it all the time, and we don't think anything of it. What to speak of fish? They're swimming underwater. Some of them never come to the surface. So every living being within creation is empowered with certain supernatural abilities. So this hawk was just floating in the wind so gracefully. I was thinking like that. How amazing. And just by the wisdom and power of nature, different species have such knowledge and such abilities, and they never have to learn it. It is inherent within them. and thousands of years, there's never been a bird that didn't know how to fly. And none of them ever went to school. And their parents don't even teach them. They just know. The hawk was circling lower and lower, lower. Soon he was only a few yards above my head. And I looked up at him. His brownish red wings were shining in the sun. His eyes were yellow. They were glistening, totally focused, looking down into the current of the Ganges. So intensely focused. They weren't wavering. He was looking for something. And I was admiring this concentration. It's a type of meditation to just gaze at something. His entire consciousness was fixed, looking for something. And I was doing meditation. I was thinking, if only my mind could be so fixed like this hawk's, looking for what he's looking for. Suddenly, the hawk plunged in, head first, into the water, and went underwater about half of his body. Instantly, there was some sort of a frantic skirmish. There was waves and splashing, and I could see the hawk body was trembling. A few moments later, he emerged from the water with a fish pierced by his claws. The fish was about 1 foot long, kind of bluish. Silver blue. That fish was frantically flapping, flapping, flapping. And I was looking at the fish and he looked totally disoriented and bewildered. And I looked at the hawk who had him in his captivity. The hawk looked so majestic and victorious. And with the fish, the hawk flew higher and higher and higher, and then flew away from the Ganges and into the forest. It was out of my sight. I began to reflect, what message is being shown to me through this apparently ordinary event, this world? It is amazing. Any situation can teach us lessons that liberate us if our hearts are open to receive. In the Bible, Jesus says, "Seek and ye shall find. Knock and the door will open." So if we're really receptive, if we're really looking for enlightenment, we can find it even in the most ordinary situations that come upon our day. Because actually, nothing is ordinary. It's only because we take things so for granted, and sometimes we become dull to the beauty of the present moment, things seem ordinary. But just the fact that we're breathing and our heart is beating and the sun is rising and we're able to walk and talk, these are all pretty amazing things. remember once sitting under a banyan tree, looking up at the tree, and right next to me was a little seed. And I was thinking that from this little tiny seed, an entire big banyan tree like this has come out. Every seed has a banyan tree in it, if it's just given the chance to grow. That's a miracle. Can any human being put a massive banyan tree in a seed? And have that banyan tree able to create thousands of other seeds, each one with a little banyan tree in it, a big banyan tree? And I looked up into the sky. I saw a cloud. I was thinking how in Bombay, where I live, one cloud during the monsoon seasons can completely flood the entire city. Usually happens once or twice every year during monsoon. Bombay is the wealthiest, most influential, powerful city economically in all of India. We're getting nice special effects. I saw your eyes were sleeping, but now you're very old. One cloud can make such a flood that no cars could drive. It's like Venice. The streets are knee-deep water. The airports are closed. The railways are closed. Every shop, even the government buildings, everything's closed down by the quantity of water in one cloud. And yet, if we want to transport water from one place to another, water's very heavy. Big trucks come in. But that cloud has what millions of trucks can't take. And yet it's so light, it's floating in the sky. Isn't that incredible? We just look at a cloud and just think, oh, it's raining. Very really nice. I wish it wouldn't rain. Plants want it to rain. What are we saying? I wish it wouldn't rain. And we just look at our bodies and every other bodies. When a mother and father come together to have a child, it's not that they have a master plan for engineering, that at this time the emulsification of the semen and the ovum is going to create, you know, this seed, and then there's going to be a form, and that this time the heart's going to start forming the eyes and the hands and the legs. The mother doesn't know what's going on, and the father knows less. And yet it's happening. The eyes, the legs, the brain, the heart, the emotions, everything comes, and then a little baby comes out. What a miracle. The miracle of nature. And every person, every animal, every insect is a product of that miracle. And do we appreciate? Do we rejoice? Isn't it thrilling? But because we take things to be so ordinary, we just see the things and we see people and we see opportunities. And we don't assimilate and grow. So while I was sitting on that riverbank, I was thinking, what am I supposed to learn from watching this hawk take that fish out of the water? The fish was just going about his ordinary life like any other day. probably swimming upstream, downstream with another school of, with a whole school of fish. Mother, father, children, friends, looking for food, playing, enjoying the waters of the Ganga. When all of a sudden, at the least expected moment, the yellow-eyed hawk of fate ripped him out of his regular life. There was a tragedy. He was about to die.
I was thinking.
We read about it. We see it on television. We hear about it. We even know people who went through such difficulties. But do we really take it seriously? That it is a reality of this world. At any moment, the yellow-eyed hawk of fate can rip us out of our routine lifestyles. Whoever we are. I've seen it happen to poor farmers. I've seen it happen to powerful politicians. I've seen it happen to multi-billionaires. I've seen it happen to the greatest scholars. What can we do about it? Then I was reflecting, if that fish was swimming deeper in the Ganges, the hawk cannot reach it. As long as we are living our lives on a superficial level, then we're so affected by whatever happens on the superficial level. But if we go deep into who we are, into our own essence, into our relationship with God, in the depths of our own hearts, of our own consciousness, we can find a place where we're connected to a current of truth. Where we see what's happening on the surface, we deal with what's happening on the surface, but we're not really affected by it. Krishna tells in the Gita, na jayate mriyate bhakadachit, which means we have a body which is always changing and is subject to so many external superficial influences. And we have a mind that's also subject to changing and subject to so many external influences. But who am I? The Gita tells us we are the life force, the consciousness, the soul within the body, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, which is self-satisfied, Atmarama. The soul's nature is to exist eternally in very deep, profound satisfaction in its own self, and its relationship with the divine, with God, or with Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive, the supreme, ultimate reservoir of beauty, charm, and grace. That infinite fulfillment of our own spiritual nature is within all of us. And to the degree we go deep into that experience, the Bhagavad Gita says, param drispani vartate, when you're experiencing a very high pleasure, nothing can really affect that. Apuryamana achala pratishta. The example is given of the ocean. Just a block away is the biggest ocean in the whole world, the Pacific Ocean. Now in India during the monsoon seasons, sometimes rivers go miles wide and pour water into the ocean. And during the dry season, hardly anything is in that river. But it's not that the ocean overfloods during the monsoons and it doesn't dry up during the dry season. Because although there's all these external influences in the form of rivers coming into it, the ocean is so deep in its own right, it's really not affected. So to the degree we can find the depth of that inner satisfaction within ourselves, we can deal with the various occurrences, situations, however they may be in this world, with a clear mind, with a detached spirit. And we can be instruments of compassion in any situation, rather than being frustrated. You see, real happiness from the yoga or spiritual perspective is not to the degree we take things from outside into ourselves through proprietorship or through sensual or mental pleasures. It's about accessing what's within us. And actually, that is expressed from us into the world. That is real meaning. That is real satisfaction. That is real love. What we are all looking for. The most fundamental need of every living being is pleasure. And the only pleasure that can really give fulfillment is that of love. Ahaitatiya pratinata. But for love to really satisfy the heart, not just the mind, it must be without selfishness, unmotivated and uninterrupted. That is what everyone is yearning for. And some of us are looking for it in that, or him or her. But wisdom is to understand it is within our hearts. That love is between the eternal soul and Krishna or God. And when we can connect to that love, then that fulfillment, that inner satisfaction manifests as compassion. And it comes out from us into the world, toward everything and everyone. That is a truly meaningful, satisfactory life. Because it is in harmony with our nature. That little fish, the hawk of fate could not affect him if he was just swimming deeper. And similarly, whatever happens in this world, we have to deal with it responsibly, with a clear mind and a compassionate heart. But whatever happens doesn't have to affect us because we're so full and so rich with what we have and who we are, and with the grace of God. I was recently speaking about how in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Lord Chaitanya was a great avatar of Krishna or God who appeared about 500 years ago. And one day he and all of his very, very great associates who were scholars and saints and avatars and incarnations, they were all together, and there was a bathing ceremony. one little maidservant who was uneducated, came from an extremely poor family. She was way in the background getting clay pots of water, filling it with the Ganges water, and bringing it and just putting it in neat little rolls for everyone to use. Nobody even knew who was bringing it. Her name was Dukhi. Dukhi means the miserable one. Now in India, even today, I have found in some villages, when a family is really poor and there's really not much hope for a good life as far as material things, sometimes when the brothers and sisters have died and the parents are struggling and suffering, when a child is born, they name him or her Dukhi, which means the miserable one. And the idea is that because we name our child like this, fate is going to feel sorry for the child and maybe give her a break. So she was Dukhi, the miserable one. And she was just doing this little thing, just bringing some water. But she did it with so much devotion and emotion and so much love. She just, nobody noticed her, nobody cared. But she wanted to serve the Lord and she wanted to serve all the others. So Lord Chaitanya, who is the Lord, he looked over across the courtyard and asked Srivas, whose house it was, who is this? And Srivas said, it is Dukhi, a maidservant. And the Lord said, this name does not sit in my heart comfortably. From this day, I give her the name Sukhi, which means the happy one. And at the same time that he gave her that name, he gave her happiness. What yogis may work for lifetimes to achieve, what scholars may strive for lifetimes to achieve, what people may give vast amounts of charity for lifetimes to achieve, she achieved in a moment. Because she was sincere, she was humble, and she wanted to serve without recognition. She wanted to serve with a pure heart and please the Lord and please the others. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridesya junatishtati. You see, the divine presence of God, Bhagavan, sees everything from inside out. And Srila Prabhupada writes that Krishna does not see what we offer. Krishna sees the intention, the motivation in which it is offered. And Sukhi, she had no material assets or qualifications, but she had sincerity. And that is all that is really required. That we are genuinely sincere. That we have an aspiration to rise above our selfish, arrogant tendencies and are actually seeking real love from within. Srila Prabhupada gave a nice example that when a drop of water falls from a cloud, its original nature is that it is transparent and pure. When it comes in contact with the earth, it becomes muddy. When we filter the water, we make it pure again. We just bring it back to its original state. So the spiritual path is meant to filter our consciousness to bring it back to its original natural spiritual state. To remove the selfishness, the greed, the envy, the anger. And to allow the true light of our divine nature to shine within our own life and for the whole world. This chanting of God's names, chanting of these divine mantras, that's how it works. It's a way of filtering our consciousness, bringing it back to its original natural state, spiritual state, beyond birth, beyond death. And that is such a great need. Recently, I was in Northern California, and I was asked to speak at the Apple computer company in an auditorium. It was very nice, and over 100 employees came. And the next day, I was speaking at the Oracle company. And then a few days later, I went a little north and I was asked to speak at the Intel Corporation. And interestingly, every one of those corporations, do you know what they asked me to speak on? Dealing with stress. It's not that we volunteer. This is the topic that they want to hear about. How to deal with stress. So I took that as an indication that they're very stressed out people. Very successful, but not without stress. We were explaining how actually somehow one of the places I told the hawk story. If you go deeper into your life, and yoga is the process of going deeper, experiencing something higher, then other things don't disturb us so much. It's just like if you have $100 and somebody steals from you $99.99. Is that disturbing? But if you have $1 billion and someone steals $99.99, is that disturbing? It's not disturbing because you just have so much more. If you don't have much, everything's a big loss. So if we have this big happiness within us, the little things we deal with. But if we only have a little, then any little thing disturbs us so much. And that big happiness is inherent within all of us. And yoga, bhakti yoga, teaches us how to transform stress and any other thing that happens into a tool to help us to go deeper and to prosper internally. I'll give an example of how stress can be utilized and managed properly to make us grow. A weightlifter lifts weights, and the stress of the weight and the lifting of that weight, if it's managed properly, it makes the person stronger and stronger and stronger. If it's not managed properly, the person can dislocate his limbs or her limbs get hernias. And if you don't put enough weight, there's not enough stress, you don't make any progress. The runner, the lungs are pumping, the endurance increases from that stress if it's managed properly. And studies, people don't like tests in schools, but they're very helpful because that's the stress of having a test, if seen in a positive way, helps us to really take the subject very seriously and learn deeper, even though it might not be so fun. But it could be fun, because fun or no fun, it's just a matter of our perception. And in spiritual life, when obstacles come upon us, when stressful conditions come upon us, it's an opportunity for us to really take seriously, to see it in a positive way, to see it as an opportunity, and to take shelter of a divine power beyond our own to deal with it. And that is a great benediction. Spirituality is the art of transforming what appears to be curse into blessings. Otherwise, we're converting what is actually a blessing into a curse by our attitude, by our perception. In Bhagavad Gita, this is one of the main themes. It's not about whether you're on this external level, whether you win or lose. Because that all changes. And at the time of death, it really doesn't matter if you won or lost anyway. What really matters is how you connect with the eternal through that situation. Krishna tells Arjuna, in this battle, whether you win or lose is not important. What's important is you try your very best with proper character and integrity to please the Lord in a spirit of compassion. That is the ultimate victory. And that victory is not subjected to the results of the world. Beautiful temple in Laguna Beach. Panchatattva. In the center is Lord Chaitanya, who made Dukhi into Sukhi. Not because of her material qualifications, but because of her sincerity, her humility, and her love. Her intent. So right now he's looking at all of us and he wants all of us to be Sukhi. And he's willing to give it from inside out. If we just aspire and make that the priority goal of our life, our internal development, how we can be an instrument of love. A few weeks ago, I was in Italy, and I visited Assisi, which is the place of the birth of Saint Francis, and where he lived for most of his life. And it was interesting, because I learned there that Saint Francis, he was... You know that prayer, "Oh Lord, let me be an instrument of your peace"? Well, he really lived by that principle. And he accessed a spiritual power by which he could heal people of disease.
when he was 43 years old, he got a terrible disease. And he was really, really in a very, very difficult situation. And he got tuberculosis. Some people said he had a type of cancer also. Anyways, he died when he was 44 years old. Not a very long life. But while he was dying, at 44, a person came up to him and challenged him. He said, you're healing so many other people of diseases, why don't you heal yourself? You're only 44 years old. You're the head of a big organization. There's so much more for you to do in this world. Heal yourself. Come on.
Does that make sense?
His answer was, he said, I can't heal anybody. And I've never healed anybody. I have no powers to heal. It's God's power. I'm just an instrument of God's power. And if God wants to use me to heal somebody, then he can do it through me too. If God wants to heal me, he can heal me. But I can't do it. And he's not healing me. So you welcome death. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse. That a great life is not determined by quantity, but it is determined by quality. Just recently, I was in the Muir Woods a few weeks ago, north of San Francisco, where there are big, big redwood trees, sequoia trees. A few years ago, I went to Kings Canyon, where there's gigantic redwood trees. One was the General Sherman tree, which is the largest tree on the planet Earth. Have any of you seen that? That tree is 2,200 years old. Full-grown adults held their hands, I think it would take about 20 people holding their hands to make a circle around that tree. I read this. And if you hollowed it out and put water in it, you can take a full bath every day for about 30 years. Big tree. And I remember I was with some teenage boys and girls, and I asked them, this tree is 2,200 years old. That means this tree was around when Jesus was doing his preaching, and this tree was around when only Native American Red Indians living here in America. And this tree saw the Roman Empire fell, saw the Mughal invasions in Middle Europe, I mean Asia. It was around at the time of Christopher Columbus coming to America. It was around during the black bubonic plague in Europe. It was around for World War I. Well, before that, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, the Korean War. It's funny how history is usually around war. Tree's seen a lot. If that tree could talk to us, what would be his message?
for humanity.
Is that question all right? And I asked these teenagers. And one of the teenagers said, that why are you people so engrossed in fighting over such insignificant, stupid things that really don't mean anything when you're all going to die so soon? Why don't you take serious what's really important in life? To understand who you are and what is your real relationship with each other. From the tree's point of view, our lives are real short. See, there's a fight over all this stuff. The Bhagavatam explains that really a valuable life, a successful life, is not based on how long we live, but it's based on quality. What is the consciousness that we connect to during our life? And some of the greatest people that ever lived didn't live very long. But in a short time, they changed the whole world. And even hundreds or thousands of years later, they're still influencing the whole world because of the quality of how they lived and what they spoke and the divine power that manifested through them and is still manifesting. So yes, life is very precious and every moment is precious. And the real beginning of a deep spiritual experience comes when we make it a priority to seek what we really want and what we really need in life and prioritize that in our life and harmonize it accordingly. And if we're just sincere, then whatever dukkha may be in our life becomes sukhi. There's a beautiful saying in the Vedic literatures: Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, which means, may all beings be happy. And in many occasions, this is chanted. The first time I ever heard it was at a wedding ceremony. And my beloved Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, he began the lecture like this: Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina. He said, may all living beings be happy. And he said, this is the purpose of marriage, to be happy. Now, as a monk, I was hearing a lot of other propaganda. I was told that the purpose of marriage is to frustrate you so much that you become totally detached from all that stuff, and then you become a monk. So now that you're already a monk, don't go through all that stuff just to come back to where you are now. Everybody has their way of explaining things. But then my Gurudev was saying, the purpose of marriage is to become happy. But then he explained, to really be happy in marriage, or be happy in not marriage, and happy in any situation is, yeah, Bhagavad Gita says, intelligence means to be illumined within, rejoice within, and find pleasure within. And to take shelter of the source of all pleasure. But what's interesting is this universal spirit. Sarve means everyone. Not just me. Not just my family. Not just my community. Or my race. Or my nation. Or my countrymen and women. Not just people of my religion.
or my species. Sarve means let all beings be happy.
Arrivo!
Arrivo!
You just made us so happy. Is that Sophia who said that? Sophia, thank you for making us so happy. That was the best part of the whole lecture. With words sitting through whatever I said, just your natural, spontaneous happiness. Because this is love, when we're concerned with all beings, because we see the connection that we have with all beings. And that is why in our own bhakti society, we follow the principle of vegetarianism, ahimsa. Ahimsa is a very deep subject. Nonviolence means not to cause any unnecessary harm, physically, emotionally, or spiritual, to any living being. To live by that principle as far as possible. So, as a matter of ideal and integrity, because the more we are selfless and the more we are trying to be instruments of God's love, the more every moment of our life has such deep meaning, such deep fulfillment, and the more we can impact the world. And stress and everything else that comes can really help us to access that. Queen of Jewels is the diamond, which has, with the help of nature's wisdom. What is diamond? It's just a piece of ordinary coal that, with that wisdom of nature, under intense pressure, has become a diamond. We have a positive spirit, whatever may come, we can be happy and grow and shine. And in all situations, this simple method of connecting with the divine in whatever may come in life has been given to us to chant this divine mantra. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Whether it's a sunny day or a stormy day, if we learn to take shelter of this divine sound vibration, we find shelter from the stress. And not only that, but it helps us to go deeper into that mantra and grow and grow and grow. Thank you very much. Yes.
Maharaj, you told about that, how this chanting the holy name can take us out of that stress. When, and like, it's like more of going deep into...
Louder, please, so everyone can hear.
Maharaj, you told about that, how this chanting of the holy name can take us deeper in our spiritual life. But what practically we feel that when we go for chanting, then automatically the negative things, in the sense, the other disturbances come, and instead of going deep in the holy name, mind pulls us more towards the external things. So the solution itself, we are not able to take the solution itself. So what can be the solution? Even when we are trying to struggle, but that struggle is not so intense. So how to go about that?
Try your best. You are sincere to try your best, all help will be there for you. And how do we try our best? The Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, it is said, yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalamastaram. The nature of the mind is to wander away. Just like this little baby is making nice little sounds. The nature of children is they like to get in trouble. Yes, one mother told me that she wanted to make a particular room completely safe for her child, so that she could go about her household activities and not have to worry about her child getting hurt. Just a little child. And she just made everything so that there wasn't sharp edges and there was nice soft carpets. Spent a lot of time making everything safe. She left the child in the room. She went out. She came back 5 minutes later. And within that 5 minutes, the child went into a drawer and found a razor blade. Didn't cut herself. The mother got it in time, but she was like, So, the nature of a mother for a little child is the child is going to run around and the mother has to always bring the child back into a safe place. Can't just let the child go anywhere. And the child's going to find a way to hurt herself or himself. The mother has to be there to protect. The intelligence is like the mother. And the mind is often like that little child. You give the little child something very nice to play with. Give the child some nice food, and the child runs and tries to eat something else. Yes? You have to keep giving him nicer food. He doesn't like the other stuff. So the nature of the mind, we're doing our meditation, or we're chanting the holy names, the mantra, we're giving the mind the best thing, but then the mind wants to go off here, to go off there, to go off anywhere else. But the intelligence, like a mother, just keeps bringing the mind back. Here's the mantra. Hare Krishna. Let's bring back. And if we are sincere to try our best, then we will get all help. Because that's all that's required, is that we're trying in sincerity. And a power beyond our own will be there to help us. Good character is to live by our sacred ideals, even when there are so many obstacles and options. Integrity is to live by those sacred ideals even in the face of temptation or fear. To fix our mind on that good character. Sincerely, we need the help of a higher power, a divine power, and we can access it if we just try our best. Ananyas chintayantomam yejana paryupashate. The Gita says, just surrender with humility and sincerity to do your best. And Krishna says, and my divine power will provide for you all that you lack to succeed. So just try and be humble and sincere. And you are guaranteed to succeed. Is there any other question? Yes, one more, and then if you like, we could have kirtan. Please.
Maharaj, you always stressed on making relationship, very nice relationship with devotees. But the more I interact with the devotees, the tendency to find fault is so strong that the very first thing which comes in mind is why somebody is not doing this or that. In spite, I might not be doing even that much. And those tendencies so strong that even the person is not present, it drags along and our contemplation goes on that. And it hinders that relationship to grow and to make that relationship very nice. Even sometimes with a person whom you know that is very sincere. How can we, while dealing with devotees, can avoid those negative things to come? At least not the first thought.
Did everyone hear the question? Yes?
No.
Essentially what he's asking is, how can we overcome the tendency to see faults in others? Yes? There's a beautiful analogy that if you put a fly in a nice rose garden with thousands of fragrant roses, the fly will ignore all the roses and look for one little droplet of excrement. And zero in. And when he gets closer to the excrement, becomes very enthusiastic. Never did that before. Relish is drinking the nectar of that. And a honeybee could be in a sewage area where there's tons of excrement and ignores all that stuff and looks for a single rose. Zeroes right into that bowl. It drinks the nectar. So all of us as human beings have free will. This is what determines our destiny. This is what determines our karma. This is what determines our life, is how we use our free will at every moment. Do we want to be like the fly? Or do we want to be like the bumblebee? If you look for good qualities in others, you'll find them in abundance. If you look for faults in others, you'll find them in abundance, even if they don't exist. Because if you're looking for them, you'll see them. Yes? The guru of my guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he had a very interesting methodology of how to deal with people who were fighting.
and who really didn't like each other and were seriously finding faults with each other. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Now, he was the guru. So people took him very seriously. And he would have some of the very senior swamis sitting in the room, and then he would bring up in these two people who were just fighting and saying nasty things about each other, directly and behind each other's backs. And he put them face to face. It's a good story so far. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada would look at one and say, I want you to tell me the good qualities about this person. Well, this wasn't an easy thing to do. But then you have to really think. You have to focus on those good qualities. And you say, well, he's, you know,
he makes it.
Not easy. But then you start saying things. You know, he's, he bathes every day. Yeah, he doesn't beat anyone. He chants God's names. He's doing this service, and he's done this for that person. And then he starts thinking of all these things, and soon there's unlimited things he can talk about. And then you have the other person find the good qualities of the others. And it, almost every time, it solved the whole problem. Because we've become so obsessed with this tendency to find faults, we don't focus on the good. If we focus on the good, we see it. We experience it. We realize it. So that's a choice we always have. Yes, your mind is finding faults in someone, but your intelligence, like that little baby that's going for the razor blade. Your intelligence, like a mother, brings the mind back. What about the good in others, in that person? You see, you become what you associate with. That's a law of nature. You put an iron rod in fire, it becomes red and hot like fire. If you put that same iron rod in ice, it becomes cold as ice. If you associate with a certain type of people, you develop those qualities. If you associate with saintly people, you will naturally inherit those qualities. If we focus on the faults of others, we bring those faults in ourselves. We become contaminated by those faults. Because that's what we're meditating on. If we meditate and focus on the good qualities of others, then we become enriched by those good qualities, by those good thoughts. It is said that trying to get vengeance on other people is like drinking poison and hoping that it's going to kill the other person. Because just meditating on that is killing your own spiritual nature. So if we know those things, we'll choose to use our intelligence to focus on that which will uplift us rather than degrade us. Does that answer your question? And when we take shelter of the Lord in that situation and try to access grace, that grace can empower us to be able to actually do that for real, not superficially.
chanting of God's name is a way to connect with that grace. But we have to have the right intentions for it to do its work properly. At this time, we will do kirtan. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Would you like to sit or dance?